All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else media.
Doc?
John.
I'd like you to meet a friend of mine, Wyatt Earp.
Wyatt Earp? I've heard that name somewhere. Don't know where, but it wasn't good.
I'm looking for Dave Rudabaugh. There's a reward for information about him if it leads to his arrest.
Are you a lawman, Wyatt Earp? You are not wearing a badge. Are you ashamed of your profession? I myself was a dentist. I was proud to be a dentist. I did not hide the fact that I was a dentist. How are your teeth, Wyatt Earp?
They're working all right, I guess.
I'll take good care of them. They cannot be replaced.
Welcome to another episode of Just Another Fanboy. I'm your host, my name is Steven, and today we continue with my short story, The Other Gunfight. I recorded 5 chapters, and I am sharing 1 chapter each day this week with all of you. In return, all that I ask for is some feedback. Is this something I should move forward with? Do you like it? Does it resonate with you? Let me know. JustAnotherFanboy@gmail.com. And who knows, we may end up with another new podcast, Steven Wright Stuff. Until then, here's chapter 3 of The Other Gunfight. Enjoy.
The Other Gunfight, Chapter 3, The Assassination of Wyatt Earp. I didn't follow the Earps out, not right away. That might have roused the bartender's suspicion. I didn't wait too long, though, neither. It was all about to happen, and I had to make sure I was in place on time. So, giving myself just a moment, I took another shot of the whiskey and then threw the saddlebags over a shoulder and rose. But then, because it was there, I had one last shot of whiskey before corking the bottle and placing it in the bag. I gave the bartender a nod as I walked past. I could feel his glare against my back as I stepped out of Hafford's and onto the wooden sidewalk beyond. At first, I couldn't see where the three brothers had gone. But I quickly found them standing in the middle of the street talking to a man who leaned on an ornate walking stick. This new addition looked as if he'd just crawled out of bed and thrown his clothes on in haste. He dressed as the others did, black coat and pants over a white shirt and string tie. He just looked a bit more disheveled. I edged closer. "This isn't your fight, Doc," Wyatt was saying.
"That's a hell of a thing for you to say to me, Wyatt," the fourth man returned.
"John Henry Doc Holliday. The four were together. Now all that was left to do was to let it all happen." The whole town was buzzing with activity. The people of Tombstone knew that a fight was coming, and they'd all come out to watch, which shouldn't hinder me in the least. I had a good idea where to find the man I was looking for, and when I should be there. I watched as a fifth man approached the four. I don't recall the fella's name, but this would be when the Earps and Holliday would learn that the Cowboys had moved away from the OK Corral, and now loitered in the empty lot next to Fly's boarding house over on Fremont Street. This is where the gunfight would actually happen, not at the OK Corral, as legend tells it. But really, the gunfight at the OK Corral just sounds more exciting. It certainly rolls off the tongue a mite easier than the gunfight in the empty lot next to Fly's boarding house on Fremont Street, that's for sure. I left the horse in front of Hafford's and headed out on foot, walking west on Allen, moving fast, but not fast enough that I'd stand out. I turned right onto 3rd, and then right again on Fremont. The Earps and Holliday would use 4th and approach from the south. I'd arrived before them, however, and could see the Cowboys hanging out next to Fly's. A small crowd had gathered on the street. Not many people, not yet. Most of the town would be out here by the time all was said and done. But for now, it was just a handful of the more curious townfolk who'd been hearing the rumors of a fight all morning. I ignored them all and entered the dress shop across the street. I didn't have an exact location for the guy I was looking for, but that's where I'd be. It was directly across from where the gunfight was about to occur, and it had a second floor. I ignored them all and entered the dress shop across the street. I didn't have an exact location for the guy I was looking for, but that's where I'd be. It was directly across from where the gunfight was about to occur, and it had a second floor. The shop was empty. I didn't question it. Whoever ran the place may be one of the few out there on the street now. Didn't matter. What mattered was getting upstairs. I took a moment to pull the gun belts and pistols from my saddlebags. I strapped them on and moved into the back of the store, both pistols drawn, cocked, and ready to fire. I found a door in the back that opened to a set of stairs leading up. I took the steps quietly. As I came to the top of the staircase, I could see into a small room full of dressmaker's dummies, bolts of cloth, and other various sundries. More importantly, I saw him. His back was to me, but I could see that he dressed like one of the locals, though local he was not. He stood looking out a window at the other end of the room. The window was open and would look down upon the empty lot next to Fly's. A gentle breeze eased through the room from the open window, causing the dresses and cloth to flap lazily in the wind. The man at the window held a Spencer rifle. He had it pointing at something below outside. I had to handle this carefully. Back in my youth, before the men from the Phoenix Initiative had come to see me, I'd have done something reckless. I would have charged up the stairs, guns blazing, hollering for joy at the top of my lungs. I was an idiot back then, still am, honestly, but I've learned a thing or two about restraint. So, rather than hooting and hollering and making more noise than a Chinese New Year's parade, I simply eased into the room, pistols at the ready, and then spoke. "Bob," I said, my voice as soft as a rabbit's back. I had a whole speech prepared, nothing much, just who I was with and how I was taking him in, you know, all the official stuff. But he never gave me the chance. The moment his name left my lips, he spun to face me, the rifle pointed at my head. "Don't," I said, both pistols aimed at his most sensitive areas. I took a step closer, reducing the gap between us.
"Why not? You're not gonna kill me."
"No?"
"You're one of them Phoenix guys. You can't kill me. Not here. Not in this wind."
"Strictly speaking, Bob, that ain't necessarily true. Sure, the people I work for don't like us killing folks who are out of time. In fact, they downright frown on it. And yet, we're encouraged to fix the time stream by any means necessary. That means up to and including ending the life of some desperate loser who thinks coming back will cure their woes. That would be you, Bob." "Now," I continued, "do the smart thing for once. Drop the rifle and come with me. No fuss. Otherwise, I drop you where you stand." I took another two steps toward him. Bob only laughed.
"I got you too,"
he said.
"You think you're faster than me?"
"I know I am."
"You're pretty cocky for a little guy."
"Little guy? That hurt." This fellow was practically begging to be shot in the face. "Look, Bob, it's obvious that you didn't do much research before coming back here. If you did, then you'd know that what you have there is a Spencer rifle."
"I know that."
"Did you know that you have to thumb back the hammer before you can fire it?" The Spencer rifle was a lever action, meaning it had a lever below the trigger that you had to cock to expel the spent cartridge and feed a new one into the tube. But you also had to manually cock the hammer as well. Bob looked from me to the rifle and then back to me. Then he pulled the trigger, or tried to anyway. "Give it up, Bob," I said. "This was a damn fool thing for you to do, you know that? I mean, killing Wyatt Earp, what were you thinking?"
"Wyatt Earp ruined my life."
"And how do you figure that?" I was just trying to stall for time at this point.
"My great-grandfather is down there,"
he said, gesturing out the window behind him with a jerk of his head.
"Billy Claiborne."
"Great-grandfather?"
"Add a few more greats and yeah."
"Okay, so then what?" I said. "Wyatt shoots him or something?" I'd already known the answer to my question.
"No."
"No, he does not," I said. "Billy Claiborne, for all his guff and bluster, runs from the fight without firing a shot."
"The Earps had him outnumbered."
"Now that ain't true neither," I said. "It was the three Earp brothers with Doc Holliday on the one side, and your great-grandfather, Ike Clanton, his brother Billy, and Frank and Tom McClary on the other. That's 4-5 to my math."
"He shouldn't have run," Bob said. "His reputation wasn't worth spit after that."
"Come on, Bob. Billy Claiborne's reputation wasn't worth much before that either."
"It was hard being a Claiborne after that," Bob said. "Each of us, right on up the line, had nothing but bad luck all our lives."
"And you attribute all that to Billy Claiborne running from the gunfight at the OK Corral?"
"That's where it started," Bob said.
I was about to retort when someone below us, out in the empty lot, began to shout.
"Throw your hands up!"
He was verge alert.
I want your guns.
This is what I'd been waiting for.
Hold on,
Virgil shouted once again.
I didn't want this.
The shooting began. I smiled. Bob cocked an eyebrow in my direction. I opened fire. It was as the smoke cleared that I realized that I had missed.
To be continued.
There you go, folks. Another chapter of The Other Gunfight. I hope you enjoyed it. I really do. And again, I would love your feedback, as this is something I'm thinking of moving forward with eventually. Let me know. JustAnotherFanboy@gmail.com. Until then, folks, be nice to each other. Bye. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Just Another Fanboy. Questions and comments can be directed to justanotherfanboy@gmail.com, or you can find me at all the regular social media hangouts by searching for @StephenOrElse. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. I also invite you to join our subscription program, Stephen or Else Beyond. And in return, you'll get episodes of Just Another Fanboy along with every other show under the Stephen or Else media umbrella early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes or go to beyond.stephenorelse.com to start your free trial today. Just Another Fanboy is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by me, check out somanypodcasts.com. All links will be in the show notes.
I just don't think I could move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Steven! Thank God. I had a horrible feeling I was going to be the only one here.
There's always next time, Steven.
It all ends now.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.